from his mouth, and the great demon Harigriva stole the Vedic knowledge. And text 9. Understanding the acts of the great demon Harigriva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hare, in who is full of all opulence, assumed the form of a fish and saved the Vedas by killing the demon. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Because everything was inundated by water, to save the Vedas, it was necessary for the Lord to assume the form of a fish. Om Magyana Trivandasya Janajana Salakkaya Chaksus Militanyena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Jayatam Sarita Pangor Mama Manda Matir Gati Mat Sarvasva Patam Bojo Radha Madhana Mohano Jai. So, because a lot of the sequence of Brahma's sleeping for 12 hours and being awake for 12 hours has been covered quite a bit, and also Yada Yada Yadharma showed how Krishna comes to protect the devotees and annihilate the demons has been given quite a bit. I thought that would be interesting to add a different angle on it. So here it says that the end of Brahma's day, Brahma feels sleepy, and the annihilation took place. That's an interesting, phenomena that takes place there. Brahma, actually like a CEO of a business, he's aware of everything that's going on in the business. His consciousness expands into every aspect of it, and wherever his consciousness doesn't go, that part goes out of control, goes bad. And we can see that also just when that matter sticks to consciousness. So Lord Brahma, when he goes to sleep, everything stops. There's nothing else going on except this great demon. He came and he took the Vedas. So someone may wonder, what would a demon want with the Vedas? And of course, there's a nice point I was thinking about. There's different aspects. I had a nice conversation with Bran, and he was mentioning how there's Veda, there's Vedanta, there's Vedanta Sutra, and the Srimad Bhagavatam. So there's a progression of this knowledge. And then, of course, we know that Krishna says in 15:15 Bhagavad Gita, by all the Vedas, I am to be known. So when the Vedas were being compiled by Vyasadeva, after making the Vedas, he didn't feel so satisfied. A spiritual master particularly came in Narada Muni and told him that he had to specifically glorify Krishna. And we know that the essence of the Bhagavatam is to actually, the essence of the Bhagavatam is to capture Krishna in your heart. By this process of knowledge, the Supreme Lord is captured. So every one of us, now that we're attending this Bhagavatam class, unknowingly or knowingly, we're engaging in this process of knowledge to capture the Supreme Personality of God in our hearts. So do you think that Krishna would like to be captured by a demon? Not so much. So, and we can see what happens when a demon gets a hold of the Vedic knowledge. Do we know anybody in recent history who has tried to utilize some of this Vedic knowledge for as a demon only knows how to do? Which one? Hitler? Yeah, Hitler is a good example. He had the swastika as a symbol of success. Of course, he turned it around because he's a demon. And he called his superior people the Aryans, the superior race. So we can see that what happens. So what's the difference between a devotee and a demon? What is this knowledge ultimately? Because sometimes it's explained in different ways, but one of the ones that I just came in contact with, which is still interacting, making all these different connections in my mind, making me a little crazy, was this, the avidya is Purusha and Prakriti. That these two elements, this is a catalyst. You know, a catalyst that separates one thing from another. So by understanding the real Purusha and the Prakriti, one can separate himself from his subtle body, because this is the actual knowledge of what is ignorance and what is knowledge, this Prakriti and Purusha. And Prakriti means this, that what is to be enjoyed by the Purusha. So in the material world, the demons, they have this mixed up. They think that they're the Purusha and everything else is for their exploitation. So how does one change from this subtle body of made up of earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego, and the senses and sense objects, and 24, 25, 26, how much, you put all these different elements together, how the creation takes place, and then he can become free from this. So it's explained in different places that when one begins the process of devotional service, the bhakti actually dissolves the subtle body. And then it's been expanded on that this dissolving process is actually a digestion. It's being digested by bhakti. And in fact, I just got a new inspiration from it today from talking to Narada Muni, because it had said earlier when I was reading it that digestion begins at the first bite. As soon as we start devotional service, the digestion of our subtle body is starting. And the reason digestion is even more clear than dissolves is because it separates it into two parts. Digestion separates what you eat into two parts. One part nourishes the body, and it turns into all of your parts, health. And the other part that's not used is eliminated. Goes through the tube. And so as one surrenders, he accepts those things favorable and he rejects those things unfavorable. But what Narada Muni pointed out, that digestion begins even before you take your first bite. Who remembers classical psychology? Yes? He just heard that the classical was that Pavlov, he rang a bell and then he fed the dog, I think it was. And they noticed that even before feeding him, as soon as he hears the bell, he starts to salivate, which was the classical conditioning. So when we hear, even before anything else, when we're just anticipating surrendering, by just this hearing process, that digestion process has already started of becoming free from the false ego and the ramifications of that, of the intelligence mind and the earth, water, fire, air, ether. And this, to follow that example, because the test is at the time of death. And the example that they gave in the Srimad Bhagavatam is, if a rich person loses his money, he thinks he's lost. He doesn't know how to exist anymore. So for a conditioned soul, when they lose their body, they're completely bewildered. How do I exist? What is my existence like without a body? They're horrified to think of that. But as a devotee with the subtle body being digested, by the service attitude, he's changed the Prakriti and Purusha. That's the knowledge of that one is he's the eternal servant of Krishna. And by changing his consciousness from the Purusha mentality, the false Purusha, that I am the enjoyer of this material energy, into recognizing the real Purusha, that is Krishna, he has everything under control. By the service attitude, he understands who he is eternally, and at the time of death. Do you know what Prabhupada said when they asked him, what will happen, Prabhupada, at the time of death? What will change? Anybody remember? He said, nothing. Nothing changes. Because he's already serving Krishna 100%. So whatever Krishna puts, whatever situation he's in, he knows. What's it, the deki machine? They had this thing for jumping rice in India. I think it's called a deki, is it? And Srila Prabhupada used to say, if you take this machine and you put it any place, it always does the same thing. If you put it in heaven, you put it in hell, wherever it is, it does the same thing. Later on, he used an example of a typewriter, because I don't think many people knew what a deki machine was. But whatever it does, whoever's type, it types. So, and Prabhupada also, he says, I'm a cow. He mentioned that one time. He says, I just eat here and there, wherever I go, and was eating something and some drinks. Anyway, it's a different sweet thing. So how does one make the transformation from one consciousness to the other? There's a particular thing that takes place. And since I pick up different strings, everybody picks up different strings from the stories in the Bhagavatam as they're progressing along. But one string that I've picked up that I'm going to intertwine here a little bit also is the idea of obeisances, that this, how the spiritual master gives one the ability to understand the Srimad Bhagavatam, to actually be interested in the Srimad Bhagavatam. In the first canto of the second chapter, it mentions Nitya Bhagavata Seva. By serving the spiritual master, the great souls, then a great service is done and one gets an affinity, a proclivity, an interest in reading the Srimad Bhagavatam, serving the Srimad Bhagavatam with submissive oral reception and inquiry. And then what happens when one gets that affinity? He develops the urge to hear the Bhagavatam. And when he has that urge to hear the Bhagavatam, Krishna says, I'll take care of, as acting as the super soul within his heart, I'll cleanse the desires from his heart. And this is then he becomes free from the lower modes of nature, ignorance and passion, and I think it was lust and greed, and he becomes established in the mode of goodness. So then we were discussing that too. So some of these points about I think about this a lot. For instance, this material world is a place of suffering. I don't think anybody could disagree with that. Is there anybody that thinks that there's no suffering going on in this world? I don't think so. I think everybody has some experience of that. So to become free from suffering, one requires knowledge. This is why the demons, Hari Griva, and the other personalities want knowledge, because it gives control. With knowledge, you have some control. But if you try to accept knowledge without a spiritual master, then you don't actually get knowledge. You get maya apragyana. The result of the knowledge is taken away. So this internal potency, this knowledge, is guarded. It's guarded by Balaram, by the spiritual master. And earlier I had mentioned one time or a couple of times ago where it came to me that when Lakshman had made the circle of fire around Sita, he says, you stay inside here and you're always protected. But somehow or other, if you cross over that, you're not protected, but also Sita's not there either. There's a Maya Sita that comes, looks like Sita, but it's not. So they never really get the Vedic knowledge. They get the Maya Apragyana knowledge, because if you look at something by what it produces, Palena Parachiyate, you know something by what it grows, if it's a seed, by what it grows. we can understand from the Bhagavad Gita that after many, many births, if one has knowledge, what is the result of that knowledge? What does he do? 719. He surrenders. Vasudeva Sarvamiti. Samahatma Ladorlama. So the result of something is known by. So if you have knowledge, then you can open the jar. If there's a jar of honey, and if someone says, what's that jar taste like? Nobody wants to know what the jar tastes like. They want to know what the honey tastes like. You have to open the jar. So this process of opening up the jar is obeisances. We're offering our obeisances. So one of the things that I like is to stop suffering. I don't know why. I think it's our constitutional position that nobody likes to suffer. So if something could give you some happiness, you'd want to understand it more and more and capture it. So for instance, how many times, we went over this once before, do we offer obeisances a day? Practically, you can't count how many times we're offering obeisances, because this is reaffirming that I want to be a devotee. That's how we, generally, most of us, excluding the ones that doesn't apply to, we're mostly, Prabhupada one time, he was giving a lecture in LA, and he said, more or less, we are all demons. Of course, when he said that, he looked right at me, so. I don't know if it was just one of those things, but it surely looked like that, you know. Also at other times it was funny, just in your own life, you see these different times. I was walking through through the temple room in the old Miami temple, and the Brahmacharya ashram was just on the other side. So the Pujari room was on one side, so I was walking through, and I was kind of in a hurry, so I wasn't acknowledging that the deities were open and offering my obeisances. I was just kind of trotting through, but each step got harder to take. You know, I was feeling the pressure more and more. You're going to have to stop. So, which is a good thing. So I finally, all right, I'm offering my obeisances, but it didn't let up then, because I was thinking that the deities were thinking, who's this walking through my room like this, you know? And I still remember the problems, more or less we're all demons. So as I was offering my obeisances, I pointed one hand like this, and I said, I'm with him. I'm with Prabhupada. Then I felt relieved. I got up and went on and did the rest of my service. So, but that's actually a fact. That it's not, it was kind of like in a jokey way, in one sense, that how it appears, but these are real events that take place, that if you considering how this good fortune is upon us, that I could tell now from reading Bhagavatam for some years, that the destiny that I had before I met Prabhupada was heading towards, what's that? Putra Loka, the hellish planetary planets, we're heading there. And after you meet Srila Prabhupada, you kind of do a 180 or a U-turn in where your destiny is going to take you. It kind of disappears. So sometimes there's some pressure that you're feeling, and I've compared that to if you're ever driving a car and you just saw you went past where you wanted to turn, and you kind of like turn at the last minute and you turn real sharply, you get pushed to the side of the car. You know, the momentum of bodies going one direction tend to keep going that direction unless acted upon by another force. So our destiny has changed so much, but due to the pressure of our old destiny, sometimes we feel some pressure on us until we can successfully complete the U-turn and heading back to Godhead as opposed to the lower planetary systems. So so. So if, for instance, we're at the point that I was getting to, hopefully, is because we offer obeisances so much, and if we could recognize and fully develop, use our intelligence to expand on what that is actually doing, what that event that's taking place is, then we could become ecstatic, which is a kind of an advanced stage of happiness. That it's a good thing. So how to use our intelligence, because we have intelligence. Intelligence directs us to what we want to do, what we want to get. That the mind has an idea, the intelligence, when it's in order, it's coming from Krishna, and it's also taking you to Krishna. So when our intelligence is in order, we just like with a businessman. I remember one time they said, if the market goes down, he knows how to make money. If the market goes up, he knows how to make money. So with your intelligence, that's a business intelligence. Devotional intelligence means how I can make advancement when things are hard, how I can make advancement when things are easy, how to make advancement in every situation. That's good use of intelligence. 10-10 for me. Tesam satatam. That Krishna gives you that intelligence. So when we're offering obeisances, it's something we do so many times. But imagine if each time you offered obeisances, you felt more ecstatic than the last time. What would that be like? That'd be a good thing, right? Everybody would like that. So you have to, at some time, think about this and expand on it. So some of the points that I was going to share with you is what Krishna, what he says about the Acharya. I probably have to call him Pushkar to finish it. He writes it in my paper, but even though he writes it, I can't even read. So anyway, let's see if I can. He writes in real big print. Acharya mam vijaniyam na eva ma yata. So in this particular place, he says acharya mam, and I was trying to say this so I would remember it. I was telling it to Keshava, and he says mam means me. What do you say, mam? Not to disrespect the spiritual master, because he's non-different in one sense from Krishna. He's the bringer of this internal potency, this idea of seva, where nobody will come up with this in the material world, seva. That's something that's imported from the spiritual world. Everybody comes up with that, I'm the enjoyer in this world. So he's bringing this message of service fresh, like, do with it, and how about this? And then there's, it says, the other one is Acharya Van Purusha Veda, that if you have the Acharya, then you can know what this Veda is. He said, then you'll know things as they are. Otherwise, without the spiritual master, this Veda, it's no good. It's no good for anybody. And just like we see here, Krishna, he said, oh, the demons got it. This is not going to be good. First thing to do, you got to kill him. And that's for his benefit and everybody else's benefit. Everything Krishna does is for everybody's benefit. And then if you can catch that up, you see that everything's going on according to Krishna's will for everybody's benefit. And you become very happy by seeing that, because there's a... I was trying to think of it. The other day I was talking to Mother Mati, and we were talking about experiencing mantras a little bit. So I was saying it was something like empathic with the mantra, but then today it actually came to me that another word for that in Sanskrit is anubhava, that you're following the mood of the other person. So this empathy is you're actually feeling the mood of the other person. So with the same idea, you can enter into these different what's actually being done, because if you can pick up where Krishna is all good everywhere, because they say that Vishuddha Sattva is all pervading. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Krishna is situated everywhere in Vishuddha Sattva. The only trick is you also have to be in Vishuddha Sattva. You have to become fire to enter the fire. So as that's increasing as the subtle body is becoming purified by actually offering obeisances, is just one of the best things to do. If we could take the time to try to enter into the different words of each of these ones, and not just kind of get through it, because I'm getting slower and slower going down, coming up, and saying them. But I've noticed if you take your time, I'm up, everybody's already up, but doesn't bother me anymore. You take the time with each word and try to enter into that mood of that this is what's taking me from Patala, from the lower planetary system, and it's by just offering these correctly, has the potency to take you all the way back to the spiritual world. It's amazing. And because it's so important to do, we're doing it over and over again. It's like the sandwich. When you come into the temple, the first thing that you do. When you leave the temple, you do it again. And this, that little, that ring of fire, tapa. Sometimes tapa is also heat. It's this fire of ordeal, which is cooks the impurities out, separates them, so you can skim them off, reject it, and get the ghee of which you can offer in the sacrifice of Harinam. If we could take, because you're meant to. Bhagavatam is meant to be contemplated and thought about. And then there's another element who knows the other element that's meant to be done with the Bhagavatam? Third verse. O thoughtful men. Anybody remember what the next word was about how to digest this Bhagavatam? O thoughtful men, relish this Srimad Bhagavatam. So that requires an extra moment. You know, if you've seen relishers, they look a little peculiar in different contexts, but I once saw this show where, I think it was in California, that they have these wine orchards everywhere. And this person, he took like one drop and he rolls it around on his tongue, which is, I guess, an art in itself. I'd usually just chug it to the back, you know, and he rolls it around, and while he's doing that, he's picking up all the subtleties that are in it. He's saying, this was a 1958, it was a little dry that year, but the nights were colder, and he can pick up everything out of one drop. They swish it and they smell. So this Bhagavatam, you can take one word, any word, you know, avarujate, there's a word. You just take one word like that, and you just swish it around. You try to see what it is, because Krishna, he's seeing that you're doing this, and he's reciprocating. How nice this is. You know, most people, they don't take the time to consider some of the things he says, but in this time of our life, we're to take these different points, and you can memorize them and hear them and interact with them, because Krishna's present in these words of the Srimad Bhagavatam. He's present, but there's some cataracts, so sometimes it's a little hard to see. But one of the ways that he's perceived is the same word as Anubhava. 11 to 42, anybody know numbers?
42.
It's the second or third word in the verse. Bhakti. There we go. Devotees are great, you just start them, you know, you just put a word out and they get going. That three things happen simultaneously. Devotion, but with devotion, what's the other thing that happens simultaneously is direct perception of Krishna. And what else happens is that subtle body is disappearing, so you become detached from everything in this material world. Those three things happen simultaneously for one who's taken shelter of Krishna. So of course, the taking shelter, we know that Krishna protects the devotees. So as we become devotees more and more by offering obeisances, we'll feel protected more and more. So every time, it used to be used for so many things, like if devotees, they would, if they got in an argument, they'd offer their obeisances. You know, we, even when you would see each other, you would offer obeisances. It was a one of those items that if you learn how to do it, it takes a little bit of interaction. Just like, what was it, Pran? There's eight items when you offer obeisances, right? So it's not hard to see the five gross items, right? You have your head, that's one. Your two arms, two legs, so that makes five. So what are the other three that aren't the gross level? What are the three subtle levels? Is that right? Chest? Oh, the mind, and one more, the heart. The heart is, if you're not offering full dandabhax, full obeisances, if your heart's not there, that's an item that has to be included in there. So the heart has a streaming line of awareness, of consciousness, that's either present or not present. You can do it without being present, or you can do it with being present, and when you, it can generate a very rapid progression. Like some of the things that are included is appreciation. So if one appreciates how this fortune, somehow or other, Prabhupada has saved me from a little discomfort, maybe one light, maybe, you can't imagine, it's innumerable how much suffering we had stocked up in our account. You know, there's not like one debt or one or two things that we owed. We had some serious stuff coming, and not just in one life, another life, another life, another life, time immemorial. All that's been deleted. Deep. Gone. Clap your hands, the blackbirds fly away. So all that's going away. So if you're conscious of that, you can put that all compact into appreciation. Sometimes you have to delineate it. If your appreciation gets a little weak again, you can rebuild it back up. And you build up these different items that can go through all in an instance just by offering obeisances. So you had the appreciation. What are something else that you could do? Of course, there's the duty. But what are some of the other items that one could put into his consciousness that, as you're saying, the heart has to be there? So there's love. That's something that's in the heart for the spiritual master. And sometimes I find that I can read different things and they make up prayers. Now, because obeisances, is that also considered a prayer? Your four prayers for offering prasadam. You know, so this prayer, it says that one, when he says a prayer, he's on the Brahman platform, spiritual platform. You go right out of the bodily conception of life when you're offering prayers, because you're thinking of Krishna, you're thinking of yourself, you're thinking of your spiritual master. Just like when we say Nama, Om, of course, Om. If you take some time, I take maybe a month, 6 months, a year, a couple years. It takes a while before you can learn the different mantras open up to you, because they're not ordinary. They open up to you if you want, if you ask. And so each one aspect, if you just take the Ma, you can stay on the Ma for months, and it just keeps becoming more and more revealed about it. Then Om Vishnu Padaya, but then Krishna Prastaya. You know where that one will take you, Krishna Prastaya? Anybody use that one for a while and try to, where is it? Goloka Vrindavan. Chaitanya Charitamrita. Not only does he say, but he can also say where it's from. Very nice. So right in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's explaining that. So now, that means when you say that word, Krishna Prastaya, where will you go if you're hooked in with this type of anubhava of entering into the mantras when you're saying them? You immediately go right to Goloka Vrindavan. How about Gauravani? Where would that one go? You know, every one of these, they take you places. So if we take a little bit of time, I know we are very busy all the time in our human form of life, to just work on obeisances. We say it all the time. And it's one of the things, if you don't work on it, it defaults into a niyamagraha, which is you just do it routinely without consciousness, which is not a regular action. You're not offering obeisances because your heart has to be involved. So if you just study, how can I offer obeisances? Then how everything else follows. Oh, I had all these wonderful notes. Sometimes I got. Here's one. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the all-pervading Supreme Personality of Godhead, who possesses unlimited transcendental qualities, acting from within the cores of the hearts of all philosophers. Now I see which one it is. Who propagates various views. He causes them to forget their own souls, while sometimes agreeing and sometimes disagreeing amongst themselves. Thus he creates within this material world a situation in which they are unable to come to the conclusion. I offer my obeisances unto him. So of course that's Prahlad Maharaj. There was one thing, this was a nice verse I thought. It says, the devotees are in my heart, and I am the heart of my devotees. My devotees do not know anyone but me. Similarly, I do not know anyone but my devotees. This is the intimate relationship between the Lord and his devotees. So, I'm sorry I didn't tie it all together. So I go. Anyway, we ran out of time, of course. So we can take some questions or comments. I thank you all for tolerating me.
I was just thinking there's so many things, but at least one thing that you said, that whenever there is a deity, one must pay obeisances. So it immediately reflected a story I heard about Guru Bayu, the famous temple in South India, which were the rituals are established by Shankaracharya. So while he was preaching Mayavadism, he was flying over Guru Bayu temple. Guru means Brihaspati and Bayu means the demigod of air. So they installed that deity of the Krishna deity, and they established that temple. So he was thinking, while he was flying, the personality, even though he's a great devotee, Vaishnavanam Jata Sambhu, but still he was avoiding, but immediately he lost his power. It's a true story, you can go there and see it on the wall, it's written. And then he fell down, and he broke his ankle, and he had to crawl all the way to Guru Vaidhi. And then that time he prayed and prayed, Lord. Of course he was sent by the Lord to do the job, but still neglecting the paying obeisances, very severe. So he wrote it. Until today, they have the system, they do puja according to that Shankaracharya. Even though he is impersonalist propagator, but he has the other side, where his mother Samadhi is there. He told his mother, worship Krishna, and told the rest of the world, there is no personality of God. It's very interesting.
The verse, Janata Peace Nichena, he says, one should feel himself low and strong in the street, more tolerant than the tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, and ready to offer all respects to others. So you can't get a higher respect to others than obeisances. I mean, generally, they put their hands together. What's inside there when you put your hands together? You know what you're capturing inside there? Anybody ever look inside? What's inside there? You got a little bit of the internal potency right there.
So gratitude, feeling emotional gratitude.
Ah, and you put it by your heart. So you capture, you want to capture that internal potency. That's Abhijita again, you know, so.
In the later of the chapter, Prabhupada talks about this today's topics.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's confusing, like, is the Hayagriva is the Lord's incarnation name or Hayagriva is a demon? So I remember the story in the Markandeya Purana. Prabhupada writes in the purport, in the Markandeya Purana the story is narrated later on in this chapter, I think, somewhere. It says that the Hayagriva is a demon who was the son of Dhanu, one of the wife of Kashyapa Muni, the last Prajapati. You know, he had all these wives. The demigod came from Aditi and demon came from Diti. Another wife is Dhanu, where the Danavas came. That's how the name inherited. So he's one of them. He's a brother of Madhu Kaitava also. Madhu Kaitava and this Hayagriva, there are three different scholars representing of Rajagun and Tamagun. But he doesn't represent Sattagun, but he took the form of little bit golden color, yellow color. Because the blue and gray, red are the color of the Raja and Tama. So while he was meditating severely on the river of Saraswati, then goddess came, appeared. What do you want? Say, I want two things. I should be invisible and I should conquer the whole universe. And I should be immortal. She said, well, I can do that. Okay, then because my parents gave me this name, Hayagriva, one whose head or long neck like a horse. Only that person, if there is any person like this, can kill me, otherwise not. So Lord has to assume this form in order to, that's why that form. Even though it's a fish incarnation, but then he took that form after he recovered from the Patala Loka, then he made this horse form and killed him. And rescued
him. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Oh, you had a question? Oh, can you run it over? And of course, my last thing before you make your comment is when we offer obeisances at the end of class, see if you can catch yourself and pay attention to each word while you do it. But all right, because we'll forget instantly. Oh, could be.
We were talking earlier about the qualities when we were talking about having empathy and having an empathetic heart.